My name is Matthew Wayne Selznick, and this is Sonatotum, where I provide personal opinions, advice, reflection, and recommendations to help you and me stay human while building a successful, healthy, creative writing life. Sonatotum is the podcast companion to Scribtotum, my blog, at mattselznick.com. And now, the show. Hey everybody, here we are. It's episode 9 of Sonatotum. It's the very beginning of August 2018, and it's about, a little bit after 10 o'clock, maybe 10:30 at night, Friday night, coming to you from the lush and lavish and humid and very warm studios of MWS Media in Long Beach, California. I missed doing an episode last week. I've been planning to do this episode for a while, but I came down with a summer cold. And, you know, as sometimes happens when I take time before doing an episode, some things have emerged in the news that are probably going to color what I want to talk about today. And that is the artist's responsibility. What is it? Why do we need it? Who has it? Why should we have it? Do we need to have it? I'm going to get into all of that, but I want to give you a little update on what's been going on with me in the last 2 weeks or so. I've been writing on Hazy Days and Cloudy Nights, my serial that's available exclusively to my patrons, people who become my patron at Patreon.com/Matt Selznick, get access to that. So I've been writing new installments of that and posting them, putting them up. I've been working on client stuff and some personal stuff and a little bit on creative stuff. And I encourage you to visit MattSelznick.com and check out the Now page and also the transparency page. By the time this goes out to the general public, this episode, I should have my transparency and income report for July posted. So that I do that every month on my site, where I show what I made in the previous month, especially as a creator, and also how my social media and community presence went up or down in terms of Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and the number of subscribers on my mailing list. So you can see all that. I do that every month so that you can have a crystal clear idea of what's going on in my world as far as making stuff and trying to find success, which are two of the three tent poles of this show, right? And also my Now page. That's an idea I got from Derek Sivers, the founder of CD Baby, and he's gone on to do many other great things. The Now page is simply a basic page on a website, like on mine, where you just explain to the world and declare to the world what it is you're working on right now. And I do that. I update that every month so you can see kind of what's on the front burner for me professionally and personally and creatively for the current month. So you can go to mattselznick.com and check out the Now page and check out the transparency page. And we'll see how I did and what I'm doing and what I'm about to do. So James Gunn, who used to be a director and producer and filmmaker with the Troma people, Troma was best known for the Toxic Avenger franchise of movies in the 80s. They are really silly B movies that are pretty over the top and offensive in a lot of ways. Very cartoony. James Gunn used to work for them. And then, of course, he became more well known, perhaps, as the director and the guiding force behind the Marvel Studios Guardians of the Galaxy movies. And by all accounts, James Gunn is a good guy. However, several years ago, he made a joke that had a pedophilia theme. He wasn't advocating pedophilia, but it was still a joke that involved pedophilia. And a figure in the alt-right movement drew attention to this years-old tweet that James Gunn had done, which, by the way, in the intervening years, he had apologized for. But he made this alt-right person made a stink about it. And Disney, company that owns Marvel Studios, fired James Gunn from the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise. And then, just a couple days ago, the same person or the same organization that this person is associated with tried to do the same thing with the comedian Sarah Silverman. Now, Sarah Silverman, she is crude, but she's also a great advocate for mental health issues and feminism and democracy. She's very outspoken. Just like James Gunn, she's one of the good ones. Now, I'm not sure what's going to happen with either of these two people, these two creators. The entire cast of Guardians of the Galaxy have signed an open letter urging Disney to rehire James Gunn and standing behind him as a decent human being. I'm sure people have come to Sarah Silverman's defense, but to be honest, she doesn't need anybody to come to her defense. She's a comedian. She's just doing her job as a social critic, as a reflector of culture. That's what I think comedians are. That's what I think their, wait for it, artistic responsibility includes. So these two creators will undoubtedly go on to continue to do good work, creatively, socially, culturally, interpersonally. And believe me, I'm the first person who, if it came out that either one of these folks were actual pedophiles or actually supported such things, I would disavow them in a hot minute. But as it stands now, I stand behind them. Because I think that, number one, it's awful that creators are being stifled in this way when they, well, again, there's a difference between a joke and actually believing some horrific thing that you say. There's a difference between a joke and actually admitting celebrating horrible things that you freely admit that you've done, looking at you, Mr. President. I think that people who make art, it's their job to create an emotional response. It's our job. It's your job. It's my job to create some kind of emotional response. Now, for some creators, especially comedians, that includes commentary on the human condition, on society, on culture, and everything to do with all of the above. But I believe that every creator, we all have a responsibility. And that's part of it. And forgive me for bouncing around a little bit, but let me tell a story. In the first years that my first novel, Brave Men Run, was out there in the world, I got fan mail, a lot of fan mail, usually a few pieces every couple of days. And it was great to get that. It was a lovely validation that I had created something that was creating, in turn, an emotional response in my fellow humans. I felt like I had fulfilled my artistic responsibility with that project, with that book, because people were responding. Most people were responding in the affirmative to tell me that they like the book, which is great. Now, Brave Men Run is set in the 1980s, and it's largely set in and around a high school, and many of the characters are teenagers. And I can remember quite well how we talked, how we acted in the mid-80s when we were in high school, because I was there. So these kids in the book, they swear, they're horny, they mess around, there's underage drinking, they're teenagers in the 80s. It's how we were. But I did get at least one email from a parent who felt like I didn't need or I shouldn't include profanity and teen sex or teen messing around and teen drinking in this book because, said the reader, I had a responsibility to my younger readers. Now, it's been a few years since I read that email or my response to it. But I remember that I was grateful for the feedback and pleased that, you know, that the person had taken the time to write and that they had read the book and that other than the profanity and the sex and the drinking, they enjoyed the book. But I explained to this reader, I'm not responsible for parenting the people who might read my book. If a parent wants their minor child to not be exposed to fictionalized depiction of teens who swear and teens who mess around and get involved with heavy petting and teens who go to a party and drink, well, number one, don't let them watch any John Hughes movie, right? Don't let them watch anything on the CW on TV. And don't, by all means, don't have them read my book. But it's not my responsibility as the author to try to think about what every parent out there is going to be offended by. No, not at all. Not in the least bit. My responsibility, as I see it, as a writer, is to basically tell truths by telling lies, you know, reflect what it means to be human through fiction. And that's going to include, to the best of my ability, a realistic depiction of the characters in their time and according to their nature. So some characters are teenage boys who swear. Some characters are teenage girls that seduce teenage boys by offering them drinks. Some characters are date rapists. Some characters are murderers. Some characters are white supremacists. These are all in my fiction. It doesn't mean I endorse those things. But those things exist in the world. And fiction is made up of drama and conflict, and those horrible things in the world are part of drama and conflict in the world. You see what I'm saying? That's my responsibility as a writer. My responsibility as a songwriter is to try and turn what's in me kind of inside out and share it with the world so that we have a moment of connection and intimacy and shared empathic response. You know, I actually never thought about it all that much. Songwriting and performing is a much more egocentric thing for me. It's really catharsis. But when somebody tells me a song means a lot to them, well, that means a lot to me because it means that my experience is their experience and we have that shared moment. We have that shared humanity. So I guess that's my responsibility. That's my job when I'm writing a song. And in a larger sense, and I touched on this when I talked about legacy in the last episode, our responsibility as artists is to present our art to the world. We do something that not everybody else can do or chooses to do. And that is deliberately set out to create these artifacts, whether they be tangible things like sculpture or paintings or comic books or films, or intangible things like music and dance and plays and song. Poetry. Our job is to create these artifacts, tangible and intangible, and put them out into the world where other people can experience them, and in experiencing them, somehow be changed. And I don't mean, you know, we're not trying to change the world. Our responsibility is to use our special gift of observation, our special gift of interpretation, our special gift of manifesting our observations and interpretations as experiences. It's our responsibility to share that with the rest of humanity. And to sometimes say the things that give the rest of humanity pause, or offend them, or make them think, or cry, or get angry. Sometimes our responsibility includes having those people get angry at us, if that's what it might take to get them to think. The old time ancient courts, I mean royal courts, the king's chambers, the king's throne room, the king's audience room or banquet room, what have you, where people would gather to feast, often included the court jester. And the court jester's job was, in part, to remind the king that he was fallible, or queen, whatever, the royal person. To remind the ruler that they were fallible, that they were flawed, that they were, perhaps, even ridiculous. It was the court jester's job to reflect the actions of the ruler back to themselves, so that just maybe the ruler might see their reflection rather skewed and outside of their own perception, their own assumptions of how they behave, and perhaps recognize that their behavior could be different, better. Entertainers, writers, dancers, playwrights, artists of all kinds, songwriters, filmmakers, and oh yes, comedians, our job is to reflect back the actions of others so that they might see themselves without the filter of themselves, and thereby, perhaps, grow and change and be better. Humor is all about surprise. Humor is basically a defense mechanism. We are shocked by a sequence of events going differently, rather suddenly and unexpectedly, than we thought they would go. It's called a punchline because it hits you. It's like a surprise. It's a jab. We love twists in movies because we didn't see that coming, and it gives us that thrill, that false sense of danger that tickles that part of our brains that kicks into action when we feel like we're under threat. It's the artist's responsibility, if you will, then, to make us uncomfortable. Let me say that again. It's the artist's responsibility. It's your responsibility, dear creator, to make the audience uncomfortable. Now, that could be telling a joke that is offensive. That could be writing a story that has so many twists and turns that the reader experiences that joyful discomfort. It could be the dance that brings us to tears. It's our responsibility as creators to make our audience uncomfortable, to bring them outside of their comfort. Because there is no growth without resistance. And if we are always comfortable by and unmoved by the things that we look to entertain us, what are we? We're bored, right? I couldn't get through that book. It was so boring. Nothing happened. What we're really saying is, nothing moved me. Nothing shook me out of my comfort. You see? Now, it's all too easy to take a creator's art, to create the tools that they use to generate that discomfort, and equate those things with the creator themselves. It's all too easy to say, Sarah Silverman made a joke about children, therefore she must actually be a pedophile. Even though there is no evidence about that. It's all too easy to assume that Richard Pryor must hate white people. Look him up, kids. If you don't know who Richard Pryor is, you'll do yourself a favor. When actually we know that Richard Pryor worked hard on civil rights and equality, especially, by the way, in his collaborations with Mel Brooks and Gene Wilder. Watch Blazing Saddles, which Richard Pryor helped write. In fact, this is a little anecdote. Richard Pryor was supposed to have the lead in Blazing Saddles, and the lead called for a black man. And Pryor actually declined the role and said, no, 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 you can't have me. I'm too black. I'll scare the hell out of them. By hell, by them, he meant the mainstream white audience. Because he understood the point wasn't to scare the hell out of the white audience. It wasn't to make them fear a black man. It was to have that role reflect the injustice and inequality and double standards that existed at the time by using a black man that was deliberately less threatening, at least less physically threatening. Watch the movie and you'll see that that's not the only way that he was threatening to the white male audience. Anyway, that's a big sidebar, but the point is, it's all too easy to assume that an artist's creations reflect the artist's character, when that's just not the case, most times. When it's very easy to look at the artist's actual character and recognize that they are not their art. And by the way, it works both ways. There are some brilliant creators who are deeply flawed as human beings. There's the science fiction author, Orson Scott Card, who many people love his Ender's Game series. I'm not one of them, so it's an easier choice for me. But people that I know have a real hard time separating the fact that Orson Scott Card is an unapologetic homophobe who actively fights against the rights of the gay, lesbian community. He is the enemy of anyone who is not heterosexual. And I mean, you know, he uses his money and his influence against those folks. That's not, as far as I can see, that's not really reflected in his writing. So, you know, even though I don't really care for his books, I could see why people do. And I see why people are conflicted. The artist is almost never the art. Just like any job, right? Just like the brain surgeon is not their brain surgery. The auto mechanic is not solely the act of changing your oil. There's more to those people than what they do for you. Right? So when people come at an artist and accuse them of being a certain way because of their art, well, that's just a cheap shot. It's low-hanging fruit and it misses the point. And for an artist to be attacked because of their art and to then change what they do, well, that's just cowardly. It's bullshit. The artist's responsibility is to create change in the person who experiences their art. The artist's responsibility, again, is to inspire discomfort in the person that experiences their art. And again, discomfort is anything that is not comfortable, anything that's not the neutral state of comfort that we all sort of rest in. So long as you are doing that, you are upholding your responsibility. As long as you are true to that, you are upholding your responsibility. As long as you only answer to that standard, you are upholding your responsibility. You don't have to do a damn thing else. And you sure as hell don't need to do what other people say you should do with your art. The people who don't appreciate it, the people for whom it's too frightening or too uncomfortable, they're not your audience. Don't worry about them. Don't worry about the critics. Don't worry about the protesters. Don't worry about the people who accuse you of behaving in a way that is demonstrated through your art. Those people are scared. Those people have probably something to work out for themselves, possibly an agenda. When have you run up against a challenge to your artistic responsibility? Have you, as a creator, received pushback against something you've created? Have you offended? Have you been banned or boycotted? I would love to hear about it. You know I would. You can leave a comment about this, about the artist's responsibility, in the show notes for this episode, episode 9, at sonatotum.com or mattselznick.com, and just click on Sonatotum or podcast. You can send me an email at mwsmedia@gmail.com on this subject. Or you can fill out the contact form at mattselznick.com. But ideally, you leave a comment in the comment section of the show notes for this episode, episode 9, at sonatotum.com or mattselznick.com, and just click on the Sonatotum or podcasts menu item, right? You know what to do by now. If you like Sonatotum, you know, a review and a rating at iTunes or anywhere you get your podcasts would be awesome. Truly, though, I'd be honored, touched, if you would just tell somebody you know about this show and encourage them to listen. If you really want to get behind the show and the rest of my creative endeavors, you can become my patron at patreon.com/Matt Selznick for no more than $5 a month. You can find all about what you get when you become a patron, when you go to patreon.com/Matt Selznick. Or again, just go to mattselznick.com and check out the Be a Patron link. The show is free. The show usually takes between 5 and 7 hours to produce each episode, from conception through recording, through editing, through creating the show notes, and so on. Doing things like editing out the sound of airplanes, helicopters flying overhead at 11 o'clock at night. And if you're listening to this show in some sort of podcast app or program, like Stitcher or Podcast Addict or Overcast or iTunes or any of those, subscribe. Please subscribe so that you get every episode just as soon as they're released to the world. Okay. My name is Matthew Wayne Selznick. You take care.